Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber Podcast. My name is Tony Groves, and today we're talking Belarus, we're talking Russia, we're talking geopolitics, and we're talking what people continually keep telling me is a new Cold War. Martin, you were alive at the beginning of the old Cold War.
Das Vedanya, Comrade Groves.
What was the Cuban Missile Crisis like? And why were you doing in Florida at the time?
Yeah. Thanks very much, Tony.
These digs are getting worse. Honest to God, they're getting worse. We are delighted to be joined by Russia-based sports journalist and host of Capital Sports, Capital FM Moscow, and an Irishman in Moscow, Alan Moore. Alan, how are you doing? It's been a while.
Yeah, I mean, the last time was in the middle of lockdown, and I have to be careful what I say to both yourself and Martin. And thanks for having me on, first of all. But the last time I said that we're talking about opposition figures in Russia, and we had a good discussion, and I kind of, there was the other two guests were a bit shocked. We were on with Ewan, and I said that, like, that Navalny isn't a guest, and he's more useful out of action than in action. And a short while later, he ended up being, well, apparently poisoned, and now he's in prison. So it's kind of, I'd be very careful what I predict and what I say next, you know?
Yeah, actually, I recall that now and what we've seen. But look, I want to go straight into events in the last 12, 18 hours. Roman Petrovich was on a plane, a Ryanair flight, and which was diverted it wasn't just diverted. We had a military plane guided down, and it now appears that him and up to four other people have been detained. Alan, what is your take? What are you hearing? What are people saying within Moscow in relation to this?
Well, my own personal take on it, when I saw it last night before we went on air and we were watching how it was unfolding, I was thinking, well, the flight was Athens to Vilnius, so that's normal. Doesn't, like, you know, Ryanair say, like, you know, Dublin to London and you land in Newcastle. That's like normal for Ryanair. I mean, you get what you pay for. Jokes aside, look, it's a worrying development. I can say from here, like in Moscow, like I've spoken with people even just about an hour ago in relation to this, Tony. And the thing that is very, very odd is that even with Belarus, there are kind of odd relations. And I, as well as working obviously in sports, I'm working in the higher education here as well. And I would say this, and this is not, this is kind of an open secret, where basically we as universities are being kind of held back from recruiting students in Belarus, which is an odd thing to do. But this is because it's not that the Belarusians don't trust Russian education or don't want students to come to Russia. It's basically that they're tired of seeing their youth moving to Russia or disappearing to Poland or Ukraine. So it's an odd country. Belarus is possibly one of the loveliest places to go to visit. It's very nice. The people are very friendly. I was on a train one time coming back from Vilnius to Moscow, and unfortunately I didn't have a transit visa. So I was returned back to Vilnius. But every step of the way that with the police force, the border guards were brilliant. And in my visits to Belarus, I've never had any issues. They've been wonderful, good. Belarusian people are very, very good. But this is not a good development. And I think that even the Russians themselves here are thinking this is not good, because we saw in Moscow, for example, in a place called Kitai Gorod or Chinatown in Moscow, where the Belarusian embassy is, when there were protests outside it, a lot of Russians would feel very uncomfortable and didn't want to be drawn into this whole situation. So I think right now people are kind of worried, because this is not a healthy thing to happen. And if it happened in Russia, I think that would be a huge shot across the bows of Vladimir Putin or any other Russian leader who would make this happen. It's very, very odd. And I don't think it sets a good precedent for Belarus.
Well, I know the EU line is that it is terrorism to take a plane down out of the sky to land it, whether the threat came from Belarus or not, but that was, they did. But we're seeing on the other side from Russian authorities that they're saying, well, you know, this is not such a big deal. You've done the same yourselves, EU. But on the EU end, this is a real panic at the present moment in time. I mean, free skies is a huge principle of Europe. Are we returning to an era where we can't have free skies?
That's a great question, because it is a case. This is like from a movie, like from Die Hard 2, when you have like this South American general or Central American general who basically annoyed the Americans for whatever reason because he didn't take backhanders. And so he's been flown to America, and then some renegade American troops try to rescue him. Then, of course, John McClane blows the plane up as it's taken off, you know, in revenge for them killing Colin Meaney. But anyway, that's beside the point. It's not a good precedent, and it's not good. And at the same time, we look at how useless the European Union. And I mean, I'm a huge fan. When I was living in Croatia, I was called an EU spy, if they exist. Because I do support the European project. I think there's so much good from it. We've benefited massively from it. But the EU, I mean, you know, standing on a soapbox and shouting and saying this is bad, I don't know, because even, for example, when there were the elections and the opposition people from Belarusia, they weren't really good actors either. They were pretty okay, but at the same time, there was an awful lot going on behind the scenes.
Just going to interrupt this podcast here to do what we have to do, and that is a shout out for patrons. That's how we keep this whole platform going. If we don't have patrons, we will stop doing this. That's not messing around. That's the truth. We can't afford to keep going.
You sound like you're threatening the listeners, which we kind of are, but like it's disheartening to have to do this. No one likes to have to rattle the bucket. No one likes to have to say you know, buddy, can you spare a dime? But unfortunately, this is the world we live in. This is how we operate. It's hand to mouth. I do want to make a point, though. If you are on patreon.com/tortoiseshack and you're availing of the consolidated feed, which gives you all of the additional podcasts that you don't get here and all of the everything else that comes out in one feed, so you don't need all the other little icons filling up your phone. You just get one stop shop. You also don't have to listen to me or Martin, because we take those ads and we insert them into the ones where we put them out in general release. So
particularly, they don't have to listen to you, Tony.
Yeah,
particularly.
I mean, after 500 odd episodes, I'm so glad that most people know that me and Martin just can't stand each other at this stage.
Yeah, and listen, that Patreon address to go to is patreon.com/tortoiseshack, or you can write a letter to RTE saying that we should get 1% of the TV license. But I think patreon.com/tortoiseshack, jump on board.
Talk to you all soon and enjoy the rest of the podcast.
When there were the elections and the opposition people from Belarusia, they weren't really good actors either. They were pretty okay, but at the same time, there was an awful lot going on behind the scenes.
Alan, there's a lot of... Okay, right. First of all, our Minister for Foreign Affairs, Simon Coveney, has described it as kidnapping. Okay? It has been, as Martin described, the EU saying it's an act of terrorism. The implications... And I want to go back to the fact that you mentioned the elections in Belarus. You mentioned that, you know, Lukashenko is behaving and has been called a dictator across the globe. And there are also, as you say, links to maybe the opposition, which are uncomfortable for many to look at, because there appears to be a Polish-Ukrainian access there that isn't really discussed comfortably, because then we see the links that bring us to a far-right movement that is on the rise in the EU, whether it be Poland or Hungary, and we see that thing. But in the wider context, this is still goes back to US, Russia, and to a lesser degree China, what's actually happening. So, you know, above it all, like, does Lukashenko do what he does without knowing that Moscow looks the other way?
That's the whole thing, because we did see when the elections and when there was protests in the street. And look, we make no bones about it. the put down of the there was a lot of carrying on with the protesters. I mean, there was a lot of very, very strange stuff going on. And as you mentioned, there were, no, even besides far right, there was a lot of outside influences in that. That is for sure. I know here journalists, one pick from Sky, who was denied, or I think she was denied a visa to go into Belarus. And her whole thing is blood in the streets. That's exactly what she said. To be blood in the streets is going to make for great TV. Now, for me, that brings me back to, say, Michael Moore, when he was talking about, like, you know, if it bleeds, it leads, about South Central LA. So this is bad news is good news. And the kind of misery porn that goes on in Russia and in this whole region is ideal, because most journalists, that's, their editors are loving this and they pay for it. But Lukashenko, you know, for better or for worse, he's done a lot of good for Belarus, but at the same time, I think this sets a bad precedent. I don't think, let's not say bringing down a plane, because then it goes back then to the Malaysian airline flights. Or bringing down a plane is like what the Russians did to a Korean airliner when it flew mistakenly into Russian or Soviet airspace, or what Israelis did there, like, you know, or what the British did to an Irish airliner. So if we say that they did kidnap these people or they arrested them, as Martin said, free skies, if this is going to set the precedent, Christ almighty, the Irish Air Force is going to be out in force, or basically when there's lads landing down in Shannon, you know, on the way back and forward between different war zones. I just think it's opened a can of worms. But then again, this will die off very, very quickly. The same as, you know, the conflict in Palestine, or the same as Navalny, who now is forgotten about. So is it going to survive a couple of news cycles? Maybe. But you can be very, very sure Michael O'Leary already has a way to spin this to make money for Ryanair.
Yeah, now I kind of agree with you that it's not going to stay very long in the news cycle, and I'm disappointed about that. I mean, there's a guy plucked off a flight and potentially could face a sentence of execution.
Sorry, Mark, can we just mention what his crime is? He was running a not even a website, really, in effect. It was a page that they were using for information that was part of the uprising and part of the protests. He has subsequently moved from that. It was very popular, and he's moved on to do another. I think the young man is only 26.
Yeah, he's a young guy, Tony.
No one wants to see this happening, whereby what is in effect, you know, you can, freedom of the press. We saw it. You mentioned Palestine and Israel. We saw where they took down the Al Jazeera and the AP building, and the world lost its mind. This is Roman. I'm gonna mess up your name, Roman. Roman Petrovic, and he is doing literally what is probably considered, you know, there's a saying, Alan, and I hear it often: propaganda is what my opponent does, persuasion is what I do. Okay.
Yeah.
And that goes for both sides in any sort of ideological conflict or in this sort of scenario. I put it just back to Martin's point. I put it to you that Russia is the only bulwark towards that becoming the norm. And when we see what with Ukraine, and when they in effect went into the Crimea, they kind of pushed and said, this is as far as we can go here, and we'll push up to the right, up to the limit. And this is another way of saying to the EU, you're probably going to issue a few nasty words, but outside of that, are you going to go any further? And I mean, you're sitting in Moscow, you must know that the feeling there is, this is the line, and we're going to go right up onto the line and stand on it.
I mean, it's kind of it is kind of who blinks first. And I remember I was down in Voronezh, which is like close enough to the Ukrainian border, when first of all they went into Crimea. Then there was, of course, the war down out in the eastern part of Ukraine. It had been building up for a while, and of course it does go back to Maidan, when there was the uprising against a severely corrupt politician, elected politician. In Ukraine, and he was unseated by people who had very, very big business interests who also are still doing business in Russia. So they're all intertwined. All these rich people are all going to get along together, and they don't mind whose sons or daughters get their heads blown off, because theirs won't be. Their kids won't be. Their kids will be safe. And I mean, the thing that killed me, well, the thing that annoyed me most of all, when the sanctions started coming into place, was I was in the local store, our local supermarket. I went down to go get my shopping on Saturday morning, and everything came into effect on the Friday. And it was a mad panic to get as much Kerrygold butter and cheese into my basket as possible. Now, I've suffered ever since, and Russia suffered ever since. And if we talk about cigarettes being currency in jails, cheese is the currency here. Like good quality cheese, because the Russians, unfortunately, don't do good cheese. They even in the 7 years since the sanctions have been in, they still haven't learned to make even half decent cheese. So, yeah, you're right. It goes right up to the border of it and see what you're going to do, because they all do it. They all, like, you know, the Israelis go up to basically, you know, drop a nuclear bomb or a sort of limited strikes on population areas. The Americans go up to do an X, Y, and Z, or they have like strikes on kindergartens and weddings, and they all know what they're going to do. And ultimately, the people at the top really don't care, because they're not affected. You know, if we're being for real about it, of the sanctions, people who aren't allowed to travel and get passports and so on, the Russians and Americans will be slapping them against the leaders, but they don't, because that doesn't work. They do it against lower down people, people they can hit. And of course, as you said, the propaganda, when you see people like Bill Browder in America, who I didn't personally meet him here, but I know people who dealt with him here, and he wouldn't be held in very high regard. But at the same time, he has some legitimate beefs, but he's then allowed to say whatever he wants, and the more outrageous and egregious, the more important it is. So I don't know. It's an awful situation where we're living in a. You can basically say whatever you want, and people, you know, it's kind of what I forget the American president who said it. It's like kind of like that. So and so has sex with a
pig. Lyndon B. Johnson. Yeah. And it was make the fucker deny it.
That's it. That's it. And that's how it boils down. We saw how this goes now with Donald Trump can say whatever he wants. And here, even when, like, as I said, I spoke with this Sky reporter coming out of a Georgian, like she had a few jars in her, but coming out of a Georgian restaurant, I was waiting for delivery and I was heading home. And chatting away, and she said, "Oh, yeah, like, oh, it's kind of boring." I said, "What have you got on?" "Oh, boring now. There's going to be no war in Ukraine." So, well, that's a good thing. And Navalny, like, he's locked away and God knows what's going to happen to him. But, like, you know, there's nothing interesting there. And I'm going, I said, "So you're still, now, this is someone who's tweeting in support of Navalny. I'm thinking, do you still kind of back him?" And she's like, "Well, why? Why shouldn't I?" I said, "Like, oh, like, he's this. And I said, "Look, I said, I've known about the guy and read about him since 2008. And I used to be a fan of his, but not after, like, I started, like, reading outside of the briefs that I was kind of, like, editing." And
can I ask, you know, yeah. We look at Belarus and we look at Russia. And Tony mentioned, you know, is this the start of a new Cold War, or is this the process of a new Cold War? And I really don't think so. I think what we're seeing is the decline of an empire, same as we're seeing the decline of the UK, and that the leaders that are there, like Putin in Russia, the Belarusian leader, even Johnson in the UK, what you're seeing is the death of these once very powerful, what they were really, conglomerates.
Here we go again. He's at it again, folks.
But what you're seeing is the decline of these. And there isn't really a new Cold War. Russia doesn't figure economically in the world anymore. It's not a player. It might rattle the saber, same as Johnson will rattle the saber, but they're not really players anymore. No. So why is there so much focus from Western media on these issues?
A bogeyman. I remember I said it, and I used a GAA expression of that Clare, I think it was Anthony Daly said it, like, we're no longer the Whitman boys of Munster. After they won a Munster hurling title after 50 years or whatever. And this is when it came into doping. And I was like, Rush is the ideal whipping boy. And you can say whatever you want about Russia. And you can claim whatever you want. And, you know, the bigger the lie, the better it is and the more it sells, because it is true. I mean, if we look at, say, Rodchenkov, who went away, and I mean, the whole situation around Ikaros is very, like, there's more questions to be asked. And as we heard, there was more left. They wanted to make Ikaros 2, but to explode the kind of the myth of clean Western, like UK and US, they were trying to get this. But of course, immediately when they were looking for funding, it was like, shut your mouth, we've done our job. So it's easy to say whatever you want about Russia or Eastern Europe. And I mean, Martin, that's it. I mean, you can say what you want. And the biggest weapon, the biggest weapon, apart from one of my aunties, would be, I shouldn't say that, she's lovely, is the simple fact that we have English language. Whoever speaks English rules the world. No matter what we say, we are Anglo-centric. And as Irish people, we're between two nations. One is a dying one. One is one that basically is doing business bigger and better than ever, and uses Ireland as basically a stationary aircraft carrier. In that sense, not just military, but for everything else that goes on. So Russia is very, very convenient to have as a sort of a punchline, as a bogeyman. But anybody who came here, for example, for the World Cup in 2018, remember how the they were going to be slaughtering the streets, and all these Russian thugs were going to be battering the life out of these poor English lads who were going to come over and just drink beer. Nothing of the sort happened. There were some incidents of scumbags from different countries, like misbehaving and mistreating people, or fans from the Spanish speaking parts of Central and South America, or I think maybe Argentinian fans, singing homophobic, or making homophobic chants in the stadium.
Alan, there has been curtailments of rights in terms of, in both. We've seen it in Russia in terms of LGBT laws. We've seen it in Poland in terms of what's going on. There has been a curtailment, and some of the laws that have come into force. I mean, are you telling me that in walking down the street in Moscow now, a trans flag, for example, or a pride flag would not raise eyebrows?
Oh no, it would probably raise fists, and that's God's honest truth. There's like football fans always act like idiots anyway because they're in a big group. Doesn't matter what country they're from, they'll misbehave. In terms of like with LGBT. The relationship, say, for example, lesbians can walk along in the street here and hold hands. Two men wouldn't. I don't see the difference. I mean, if people love each other, love each other. I don't see the difference, but there is that weird difference made. Yet, you watch Russian TV and there's openly gay artists, openly gay politicians, but they kind of, their private life is their private life. And the whole Russian thing is, look, so what? Live your life. Just don't wave your flags in our faces, which is very, very, it's something we would have grown up in Ireland. So we would understand, and I understand it. And it's a very, very strange thing. It's like kind of people are afraid of that there's an inadequacy, something that it's wrong. There's an illness surrounding that. The same way as we would have seen, you know, if there was someone who, for example, in Ireland, but I think in the 80s, if there was someone with Down syndrome in a family, there was kind of a red flag raised that there might be something genetically wrong. There still is such a stigma, this stigma in traditional societies, in Saudi, where I lived in Saudi Arabia for 2 years, the same there, where people were kind of hidden away, if you what they would term as a disability. And unfortunately, in a lot of these societies, people's either I can't say gender or their sexual orientation, I think that's the nicest way to put it, will be seen as a deficiency of some sort, which is absolute and utter bullshit. But unfortunately, this is the view, a very traditional, conservative, I won't say backward view, because then that makes me look like I'm looking down on people, which I'm not. People have the right to their views, but is it progressive? Is it healthy? No, it's not healthy in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, I think where the line between conservatism and tyranny is that you lock people up for it and that you punish people for it.
Yeah.
It's okay to hold a view. Everybody's entitled to hold a view. But are you entitled to express that view in locking people up or punishing them for the way they are? I mean, you can't. I mean, that's the difference. It's the difference between, we'll say, Russia and Ireland. There's plenty of conservative views in Ireland, but they don't get the choice to decide that people get locked up for whatever their sexual orientation is. Now, that's the difference. And that is the difference between tyranny and conservatism.
True. But I mean, people haven't been locked up for their sexual orientation. They've been locked up for example, has been in law as breaking the law. And this is the fine line. I think it's an awful line to try and walk, because here, I know we discussed this last time during lockdown, where we were speaking about the situation in Russia. Here we have two of the most conservative religions in the world. Okay, two of the most conservative religions, one of which is extremely reactionary. I think that's the nicest way to put it. We've got Orthodox Christianity, which again has very strict, still a woman goes into a church here and she has to cover her hair, like my granny would have done back in the 1970s and 80s. You can't go in wearing short sleeves. You can't go wear shorts and so on. It's something that even in what we would call Holy Catholic Ireland, we moved on from 30 years ago. So that's one. The other one is the one that's, Islam. And not, again, we know there's all different shades of Islam or types of Islam. But the one to say would be based down as, down in the Caucasus Mountains, which was kind of infiltrated slightly from Saudi Arabia, but they kind of beat that back. And now they have their own kind of brand of Islam, which is very, again, very dangerous and something that is trying to keep a balance between. So you've got these two very conservative groups who dominate political discourse in the country. And it's very difficult. And I know we discussed this about, in the pod with Tony when we were viewing.
Yeah.
Remember, and it, Putin walks a fine line, because we have, I think it's over 100 nationalities in Russia, and we have a huge amount of Buddhists as well. Moscow has more than 1.5 million Muslims in the city. Most of them come from other regions of Russia. So, for example, Tatarstan, where Kazan is, that's, they're very progressive, they're very forward-thinking and very dynamic. So they have a different view on life. Then we've got a lot of people who've come in from Central Asia, from Kyrgyzstan, Turkmenistan, Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan. And many of them have very, very traditional Islamic views. Or I would say pre-Islamic views, because Islam is kind of the catch-all for it, unfortunately. So this is where the danger will come in. And again, this isn't just for LGBTQ or LGBTQ plus. It also comes in for just people who have different views, different color hair, different outlooks on things, or even views on how women should be treated. So this is where it's a minefield. And I remember I mentioned during lockdown, where we weren't allowed 100 meters from our house. Okay, 100 meters. So I was kind of lucky that I had asparagus 50 meters from the house, which then shut down. So I had to go a little bit further, 75 meters, to get to a store. But we were kind of allowed to walk around our block. So do about a kilometer loop, like of a walk. So I take my little fella out and we walk around the corner. And there's a place, a coffee shop, which is kind of what we hear the Russian term is pafosny. It's kind of like a, it's like cool, kind of like hip place, but more for kind of richy riches and kind of like people want to look the piece, you know. I'm from O'Hurd, so that just doesn't work with me, you know. And this is not to do with being a north side. It's just being kind of my, our local cafe is called a Hungry Monkey. There, yeah. I've said it, you know, and does very good breakfast. That's not a plug, by the way, Tony. That's just a fact.
In fairness, that's Mulhutter used to just be a series of cottages, you know.
That's what it was.
Yeah, but so when I was growing up, Mulhutter was the countryside, but you know,
it was.
But Alan, I'm accepting what you say that there's a two conservative different outlooks too, and all of those are on a spectrum, whether you want to talk about how far across that they range. I mean, we know this from all organized religions and none, that there are people who can use certain methodologies or ideologies as a controlling factor. However, at the head of it all, you have got, in effect, a man who's been in power since before Martin was born. And Martin is 53 now. I mean, it's hardly an endorsement for a thriving democracy.
Yeah, I mean, it's very, very difficult that you know, he... Let's put it this way. When Vladimir Putin came into power in 2000, Russia had just been slaughtered, like in every sense, slaughtered in the streets with, we hear stories about Moscow. And I mean, I would have seen the after effects and read the stories and spoke to the people who had to go through it. So they tried to get get rich quick scheme, which bankrupted the country, which sold out the entire country, which basically had people starving to death. I mean,
I created an oligarch class.
Exactly. And it was the connected people who were in the right place at the right time. Now, that is complete nonsense. They weren't in the right place at the right time. It's like saying, looking in Ireland, are people who are involved in Fine Gael, are they in the right place at the right time? No, they went to the right schools. Their parents were educated in the right ways. They spoke the right things. They played the right sports. They speak the right way. So these were already an elite who were basically like grab power. Simple as that.
I remember I'm one of those rare people who actually read War and Peace. And it's so funny when you see some of the names of the oligarchs, modern day oligarchs, they had some of the factories along that were sprouting up in all the way back in Tolstoy's novels, the same family names. It can't be a bloody coincidence. I refuse to believe it's a coincidence.
No, like people, there's a lot of people, who lost out were the people who we would describe in Ireland as good sorts, good people, people who were actually doing social good. They might have been rich, but they were socially giving back. That's not good for communists. That's not good for capitalists, because they make them look bad in both senses. So they were going to be stripped out no matter what. So the end of the 90s, Russia had been collapsed, had been sold out. The Americans were, and not just the Americans, the English Europeans went in and made killings. I mean, and then we got these people who were then walking away, who now look like hold themselves above, who basically rape, pillage, and plundered in Russia. They, you know, the Russians needed, and they always say they want a strong leader. I don't buy that. But they want someone who's actually going to show a bit of strength and a bit of backbone. When Putin came in, you know, he inherited like a failed state. I mean, they were bankrupt, they were struggling, they had terrorism was rampant. For example, like the Kavkaz, especially the Chechen mafia, taken over a lot of Moscow. One of the favorite things to do was if they wanted to get extortion from a store, they would go in and warn them, or else they would just basically walk up, get a hand grenade and throw it in. Students in universities, in university campuses, basically female students lived in fear of their lives, because no matter what, like, anything could happen to them, especially with these guys who just basically were, you know, had moved up to Moscow where the money was, and they were just, you know, doing whatever they wanted. So it was, so Putin coming in, there was no one else. He had to take over. He was basically put into place. He took over. The democracy movement, unfortunately, a lot of them had sold out. And this was the biggest thing, that people didn't trust them, because they'd seen how there was this great big, you know, get rich quick scheme, which promised that they were going to be living, as they would say, in Santa Barbara. Now, Santa Barbara was a TV series, which is huge here. Yeah. Kind of like our Dallas or Falcon Crest. So the Russians thinking, we could live like this. This is going to be great. And suddenly, bang, they were broke. They're basically thrown out of their apartments. They were starving in the street.
So would you think that Putin is like a halfway house between communism and democracy?
Initially, yeah. And I think he's more communistic than democratic, in my opinion. I think that he has tried to sort of like get the balance, but it's impossible to balance. When I lived in Croatia, I was there for the best part of over 4 years, and the guys who had encouraged and benefited financially and politically from the war in Croatia, the HDZ, who are actually Fine Gael's good buddies, they ended up like they were in power and they lost power, came back into it again, and always at the top. And these were kind of like center right. They were the guys who were caught always with corruption all the time. But they were always trying to say like, oh, we're kind of progressive socialists, which was just a pure nonsense. Putin just, like, he's not a nationalist, because he's represented so many nationalities. I mean, if you look at his cabinet, you have so many different nationalities there represented, so many different religions represented. And it's walking not just a tightrope, it's walking a tightrope with alligators and mines on either side.
Is there a future for Russia post Putin then?
No. And it's not that Putin's doing a great job or he's so good or there's no one but Putin. No, I think it'll either go well or bad, because, you know, it's a kind of that it's like it's kind of it's almost like a welfare state in many ways, that everyone's benefiting from the kind of what he's been able to harness, because of course oil companies, gas companies were just basically sold off, not for a pittance, it was sold off for good money, but the Russian people didn't get the benefits of it originally. Now they do. Not as much as they should, not even half as much or a quarter as much as they should, but they do. What happens next? I don't know. I do worry about it, because when I look at the people who are in opposition, like the proper opposition parties and that, you've got the communists who really aren't communist. You've got kind of the center left who are okay, but also aren't kind of what we would say, like, say, people before profit or like kind of the socialist party. They're not at that level yet. And then you've got the far right nationalists, and they're worrying. They are very worried, because they'll talk crap as much as possible to get attention, but ultimately they'll do whatever it takes to get into power. And that's where the worrying part is.
And they're on the rise across the region, not just in Russia itself, but also, as I referenced earlier, in Poland, elements in Belarus itself, as we mentioned. We've seen it in Hungary, and we've seen crossover. We've seen a playbook, and we'd be remiss to say that they haven't had impacts in recent elections in Spain as well, and in things that are developing. So it is very much something like, there are no clean hands here, Alan.
No. Even in Ukraine, if you look at it, one of the things when Maidan happened and the new guys came in and took power, and look, legally, in every sense, they should have taken power. The guy who fled, like the president, he, Yukashenko, he, or sorry, not Yukashenko, I just blanked his name for 1 second. He should have handed over power properly. He didn't. He made it was an awful mistake. But when the guys came in, the ultra nationalists started to have their way because they're like, listen, we batches, we spill blood in the streets. We need to be able to get something back. One of the first things they did was removing Russian language from the education curriculum and from offices of power. So unless you spoke Ukrainian, which most Ukrainians couldn't speak like properly, it's like we say, okay, if we had a load of Gaelgors come in into power in the Dáil and say, do you know what? Unless you speak Irish fluently, you're not going to get a job. Unless you speak, you're not Irish. That immediately came in, and that was fuel to the fire for the halfwits on the Russian nationalist side, who were, hold on, we've been in power, we've kind of had a bit of the control for a wee while or for quite some time now. Now we're being threatened, and there is going to be a reaction. And unfortunately, there's the elements of both sides that make money from it, that profit from it. And I always go back to when I lived in Croatia and dealing with people who are caught in the middle. And this is what I saw in Ukraine as well. The people caught in the middle were, like, say, down the center south of Russia, in Voronezh, Belgorod, that kind of region, like where I was living, of mixed marriages. Now, the mixed marriages go back 50, 60 years, like, you know, because when it was Soviet Union, there was no boundaries. Yeah, you're Ukrainian, but whatever. In Croatia, the people who lost out were the people who tried to walk in the middle. The guys like Milosevic and Tuđman, they had kids of military age, but they never went to war. Like we saw what happened with Maggie Thatcher, saying, like, Mark Thatcher was out, was it one of the rallies, the Paris-Dakar rally, and she sent out helicopters and, you know, planes to find her son. Now, he didn't go down and, like, fight in the Falklands. So there's the ones who were benefiting from it at the top in politics, and unfortunately, they still control the narrative in Ukraine, in Russia to a fair degree as well. But it's kind of
I think it's difficult. It's the same the world over, Alan, I think. And I think it is the same the world over. Any plans on coming? Two questions for you before I go. Any plans on coming back to Ireland? And have to ask you about sport. I just have to. I can't not have you here and ask you about sport. Liverpool, just the best team. Just the best team. You have to agree with that.
Okay, second one is a loaded question. I'm in trouble. If I go into it too deep, I'm in trouble. But anyway, no, I'm not. The first one, yeah, I mean, I get home regularly to Ireland, and I work with GGE, which is Gaelic Games Europe, and I'm the PRO for them. So luckily, we've a terrific club here in Moscow. And one actually in Ulyanov said, about less than 1,000 kilometers east of Moscow, a GA club there as well. To get back to Ireland, yeah, of course. I want to get back to Ireland in some way, shape, or form to live, of course. I've kind of given myself, like, the countdown clock is on. So 3 years, I'm counting down to 3 years. I was going to leave after 2018 because I'd worked with the World Cup bid, worked with the World Cup preparation. So once the World Cup was done and I commentated on the World Cup final, I was like, that's been done. But then life gets in the way and I'm enjoying working, kind of going in a slightly different direction, still with sport and with higher education, but still at the same time, getting back home. Yeah, 3 years is the countdown that's going on. But I was home last year. I left Ireland on the 1st of March, and a week later, everything stopped. Everything stopped in Russia. I flew back in the 1st, did a radio show. I think a week and a half later, on the 15th, was our last live studio show for, I think, what's until the end of August, I think it was, you know.
Have you had your Sputnik?
No. I've had COVID. But and look, I'll say I'm not skeptic. I'm not in any way, shape, or form. I think the vaccines are great. I'm just kind of, I'm looking because when I've seen people moving, like going to Europe, going to the States, and they're requesting that you get vaccinated, but they don't recognize Sputnik. A lot of my friends here have gotten Sputnik. It's worked very well for them. They're feeling happy, safe, healthy, but But I'm thinking about it. My mom had her AstraZeneca. She had her first one there 2 weeks ago. Very soon she's getting the second one. Desperate to get home and see her. We've lost family. One of my uncles, I was very, very close with, he was my dad's basically big brother. He passed away when I was away. I had a cousin, an aunt who passed away as well. So I kind of wanted to get home desperately, but I'm not going to. I've seen people take chances. I've seen people like the Egypt just heading home. But I'm trying to be sensible about it. 2 weeks ago, for example, and just it brought it home to me. My little fella, with my ex wife, he splits 1 week with me, 1 week with her. And with his stepdad and his little half brother or brother, his stepdad got COVID there just before the May holidays. And that meant that my little fella, Tim, had to go into isolation with the whole family, which was a killer because we had planned to have. We had 10 days of a holiday planned. We're going to do all the different stuff in Moscow, the whole lot. Shortly after, on the Thursday before last, his granddad, his stepdad's dad, passed away from COVID because the two parents got it. On the Saturday, the mom passed away. And on Friday, they were both cremated. Now, that hit him hard, but it hit everything like a ton of bricks. So it brought home to me that it's better to be careful. And COVID is on the rise in Moscow. People are, it was very, very bad before New Year and Christmas New Year. I think it's unnaturally low. That's my opinion. The vaccine rollout has been great. People of all ages have been able to go get it. It's freely available. But I still think it's a bit more of a problem than people let on. But anyway, that's with me. But I want to get home. In terms of Liverpool,
We'll leave that for a whole other podcast.
I have to be careful because I did predict on the 3rd of September last year, because I was digging into it, and I mean I predicted the October before last and Liverpool had won the title, just to like, if they were still at decent odds, and like if you get odds like 2-1 on them, throw your house on them, they're going to win the title. They did. I was glad for them, delighted for the fans. It was great for them. But from doing research and speaking with people within the club and around the club and looking at who was working with them and so on, and speaking with the former assistant to Jurgen Klopp as well, I knew they were going to have a big collapse. How? Because I knew that they'd gone nuclear to win the title, because they were awesome. They were just best team in the world by a long shot. Bayern Munich were good, but Liverpool just, they were great. Great looking football. But anyway, long story short, and that was that I predicted, I wrote an article on it, that they were gone. They were not going to win the title. They were going to struggle in Pep and Jesus. Sorry, just colleagues putting their head in. They won't be signed documents, but they can wait. Liverpool are more important. But anyway, I predicted they were going to, they were coming off the cycle. Make of that what you will, but I described it because they had supercharged on caffeine. They were building up huge injury risk. I'd shown how there was a lot of lads were like British cyclists and British athletes, that they had breathing problems that needed inhalers. So there was all the things were built up for that. And I knew there were, and I was slaughtered for saying that. Slaughtered. I was abused left, right, and center, except by people who were in the know. And the weirdest thing was getting messages from football journalists going, "Feck me, Alan, how could you say that?" Like, I mean, and then they started giving me extra information. I'm like, why didn't you just publish that? I should, like, you know, we want to go cover the bloody games. And I'm going, talk about it. Just say it, because
Alan, it's endemic, and whether we're gonna talk about Liverpool as an entity or across sports, it's not that long ago that NBA players would spend their summers in Europe having their blood washed and these sort of things totally legally, totally within the you know, there's no testing going on until you get back to the US and whatever
zero.
Yeah,
I told Tony, and the biggest problem, and I think it's something that needs to be talked about in sport, and it's avoided massively, painkillers.
Yeah.
Just painkillers. If if we did away with painkillers, because I box at international level. I played soccer to semi-professional level. I played, well, rugby to a decent enough level. And the biggest mistakes I made were going out when you're really not hanging from a hangover or like from headache or a bit sore, but when you literally, when I tore a hamstring, strapped it up, because if I didn't play, I didn't get paid. And I was living from, you know, week to week. So I had to strap it up, take a handful of, now I was very naive. I just had like simple painkillers, like Anadin or aspirin or whatever like that, not really know what they were going to do. Got out and played and made it worse. Like, so, like, but the painkillers, like, I mean, when I work with tennis players, for example, the majority of the lassies, they'd go for 3 weeks playing flat out, and they'd be training, playing, recovering. And after a while, at the end of the season, you'd send them off on holidays, but they were physical wrecks. Like, and the same with footballers, rugby, GAA, it's, and I mean, I love sports, but by God, painkillers is where we need to have a conversation.
I think that's a great point to leave this, because an hour with Tony and I need a few painkillers myself. So thanks, Alan, very much for coming on and having chat. It's been really interesting, to be honest. It's been really, really interesting. So thank you for having this chat with us.
Thank you, guys. I mean, Tony, thanks for reaching out. And Martin, great talking to you. I've listened to you and I've liked what you said. And look, I'm a realist, and I Russia has its pluses and minuses, same as any other country. I will always big up Ireland, no matter what I know, even though I know what we had to face at home and the controversy and the corruption. But by God, I still love Ireland, and I choose it over any other country. And well, I'm sorry,
we'll see you someday in the next 3 years, Alan, and we'll put that to the test. Listen, folks, we had to postpone the conversation with Una Mullally because something else came up, but it is tomorrow morning, and I've just received some footage from Hanna Salah in Gaza, so she will be joining us to discuss that in the coming hours, and that'll be back in your feed. Thanks for listening, and we will talk to you all very, very soon. Take care.
Tony and Martin, Martin and Tony, speaking to interesting people only. It's the Echo Chamber Podcast. Subscribe now on Patreon.